This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I am joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. Now, you have to tell me what's happening this Friday.
Oh, this Friday. Oh, I think I'm just like maybe going to go for a ride on my bike. Actually, no, I'm not. I'm going to Dunedin. Do you know what I'm doing on Friday, Sam? I am finally, after two cancellations and a lot of money lost on flights, flying to Dunedin to graduate.
Whoa!
At long last. Thank you. I'm so happy that there's no more, there's no COVID to cancel my flights this time, and no cancelled graduations. Finally going to do it and get to walk across the stage with my peers and my colleagues, and it's going to be amazing.
And you get to stand on the stage while someone reads out a shortened version of your abstract.
That's going to be funny. Were there any of the swear words that were in the abstract? I can't remember.
We shall find out in a public way on Friday. And who are we introducing today?
It is my very great pleasure to introduce Francisco Hernandez. Francisco is the Green Party candidate for Dunedin in the upcoming general election. He's a climate change advisor and former president of the Otago University Student Association. What a committed individual you are, Francisco. That's a lot of goodness that you've done in your life already, and here you are wanting to take the step into the abyss. Congratulations and commiserations all at the same time, and welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Thank you for the invite.
So, Francisco, this show is called Blowing Bubbles, started at the start of the pandemic. So we've been asking people how their bubble life was, even though that's now turned wider than the staying at home bubble. How was your bubble life?
How my bubble life is now, or how it was?
How it was, and what have we learned from it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, like a lot of people, the bubble life was like kind of isolating for me. I mean, I spent like, you know, 2 months during the lockdown not talking to like a single person other than like face to face. So, yeah, I don't think that was that great. But yeah, how it is. And sorry, what have I learned from it? Did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I learned how to, you know, cook a lot of meals using a microwave during the bubble period. Yeah, just learned how to work remotely, like a lot of people had to do. And yeah, it was like not a great time, really, to be honest.
So I think I met you about 10 years ago. Would that be right? That was about when you were a USA president. You did a master's in entrepreneurship.
That's right, yes.
So what have you been doing since you left the public arena of a USA president?
Well, after OUSA, I moved to Wellington to try and look for work in the public service. Was hard going at first. I think it took like 6 months before I found a job, and I had to work, you know, 4 or 5 different part-time jobs to get by, which is obviously not a fun period, but, you know, builds resilience. And then after that, I went on to work for the Green Party in Parliament, and then, you know, rose up from the ranks from executive assistant to like working in the leader's office as a policy and media advisor. And after that, I went on to work at the tertiary, you know, across the public service. Did a stint working for the Greens in Australia as well for an election campaign. So, yeah, been all over the place, I guess, since I finished up at OUSA. But I went back to Dunedin at the start of last year to take up a role in local government here as a, you know, principal climate advisor.
Cool. What does a principal climate advisor do?
So we're working on a plan on how to reduce emissions for the community. So making sure that we work with, you know, farmers and growers and Manawhenua and, you know, business and local councils right across the region. So, yeah, it's basically in the climate change reduction space, but also like working with communities and developing a plan on how we can make the region more resilient to the impacts of climate change. So, yeah, a bit of that, a bit of everything really to do with climate change in a regional perspective.
You said that you were worked in sort of the media advisory sort of space. Is that where we are in terms of that climate space? Are we at the space where the science is essentially done and now it's a matter of doing it and communicating that doing?
Yeah, I think science is never a settled issue, but the fundamentals of climate change are not going to, you know, aren't going to shift. It's about what the most effective mitigations might be and what, you know, the future technology that develops in terms of that. But yes, I would say that the science is like of the fundamentals is done. It's all about how we can communicate interventions and how we can rapidly scale up and develop new technology. So, yeah.
I've been looking at diagrams of sustainability. It's my hobby and all-consuming passion. And it's really difficult trying to find ways of representing how time is taken into account. And I think that the biggest problem we've got is that even something like climate change or biodiversity collapse or anything else you like, it's too easy to put it off. It's too easy to say, oh, actually, this election, what we need to, this is about a cost of living crisis. We can't be dealing with sustainability this time. Do you have any ways of reframing that discussion?
I think the way it's very easy. I think it's like a very human thing to try and put things off and procrastinate until the very last possible moment. I think one of the ways that we can kind of get around it is by doing things that countries like Wales have done and have set up kind of commissions for the future and like requiring people of today to take the impact of the decisions we're making today, the impact of that on the future well-being of people. I think we have started doing that a little bit with the Zero Carbon Act, you know, which I helped push along because I was a member of Generation Zero, a youth activist group with a big focus on that. And then we saw a little bit of that at the Climate Change Commission as well, where I also worked, which was my immediate job before my current one now. And in that, we wanted to like kind of take the partisanship out of climate policy. And to some extent, we succeeded in doing that because the emissions budgets that the Climate Change Commission recommended have cross-party support, you know, both National and Labour and the Greens, you know, support that, and also New Zealand First. But what that does is make sure that that the emissions budgets aren't going to keep shifting when we get a National or Labour government. And it makes sure that even though the policy to accomplish that might change, that, you know, we have a little bit of certainty on the emissions reduction trajectory. So by doing things like that, we can kind of, yeah, really help the conversation along and make sure that we are taking climate action, you know, no matter whether that's kind of a more market-based approach when the blue team gets in, or whether that's a more kind of active government approach when the red and green team kind of get in.
Let's take the first of your music choices. Let's have The National, Dark Side of the Gym. Why this one?
I just really like the song. It reminds me of, I guess, first love.
Thank you.
to ask if you could stay, but you're on something with your friends around. There was nothing I could say.
Big change from being the policy guy who writes the future to being to wanting to be elected, to be sitting amongst people, some of whom want the future that you see to happen, and others who don't have any, even the beginnings of a clue of how dire our circumstances are right now, and certainly don't feel inclined to be part of the change. How do you think that's going to go for you? Like, Do you worry about that? How do you feel about that? And why do it?
Well, I think I'm running because I wanted to be a strong voice for, you know, Ote Poti Dunedin. This electorate is facing a lot of challenges, like with the hospital rebuild that keeps getting, you know, cut down, with the tertiary education cuts that keeps happening. So I wanted to stand up and be a strong voice and also like help articulate what's actually at the root of this crisis. And at the root of this crisis is that kind of refusal to address the elephant in the room, in that we don't have a fair tax system in New Zealand. You know, the very wealthy are paying less effective tax compared to like a nurse. I think the IRD study showed that, you know, the ultra wealthy in this country paid 8.5% of their income compared to 10.5% that a minimum wage worker might make. And look, quite frankly, that's outrageous. And what our refusal to tax wealth means is that we're not funding public services the way that they should. And that's causing shortfalls in how we fund, you know, the tertiary sector. The Polytech here have had a lot of cuts, and I'm sure you've had a lot of colleagues, Sam, that have experienced the kind of how distressing that is. And the university is starting to get cut as well. So, yeah, I stood up to try and be a strong voice for the community. I guess for your first question, yeah, there's a surprising amount of overlap between policy and politics. I mean, politics is basically the process of contestation of policy, really. It's how you interpret policy ideas and how you marry up the values that you hold as a person and interpret and implement the particular policies that get made. So, yeah, I feel like there's a lot of overlap. I think policy is the stuff that gets made in the back rooms, and politics is how you sell that policy.
Francisco, one of the challenges that I see for MPs in Parliament, especially for the smaller political parties, is the reluctance of the big parties to introduce policies that we need, especially if they're unpopular, because they don't want to miss out getting re-elected. How will you work with that?
I think this election, we've seen that small parties can become big parties and vice versa. We've seen record polling for the ACT Party and also the Green Party as well. So my message to people is that if they want to see the radical ideas kind of happening, you know, you've got an opportunity to change that in the election. And second of all, as how to work with the big parties, I think it's about, there's like, eventually, and this is an oversimplification, eventually, you know, whatever green policy is eventually becomes Labour policy like a decade or two too late. So just by having that influence in that public discourse and slowly shifting it, you can really make things happen in a way that the big parties can't, because they're kind of addicted to incrementalism, you know, they're wedded to the past. And what parties like the Green Party can do is advocate for things that might be unpopular, might be a little bit too out there at the moment, but will eventually become popular, partly thanks to the advocacy we do, but also thanks to the political power that we're able to gain through the ballot boxes run by having that kind of influence in the political process that way.
What challenges do you see for yourself in that space? What won't you like about it?
Well, I've worked in Parliament before, not as a member of Parliament, but as a staffer for the Greens. So I kind of have an inside track on how the sausage is made, so to speak. But I really dislike how some people are kind of have to be wedded to the political game, to the partisanship. Because like there are things that, you know, all parties do agree on, but they can't kind of agree on a common policy because, you know, they can't do it for political reasons. And I think that's the one thing that will frustrate me. And yeah, the other thing that will frustrate me is like seeing the influence of big business on particularly parties of, you know, the right. We've seen that National and ACT have been able to out-fundraise Labour and the Greens by an 8.5-to-1 funding margin. So basically, for every dollar that Labour and the Greens get into, the Greens into Pati Māori get, that the parties of the right, which are ACT, New Zealand First National, get like, you know, $9 for every dollar we get. And look, I know that the wealthiest people in society, they're not fools. They're not throwing away their money for nothing. When you donate, when they're donating big bucks, 50,000, you know, 100,000 donations to these parties of the right, they know what they expect to get. And I think that's frustrating, seeing the influence of people who already have a lot of wealth and a lot of influence in our society getting even more. And yeah, it's a stacked playing field, and it'll frustrate me seeing that reflected in Parliament as well, with like the lobbyists and the, you know, the big corporations spending up to get FaceTime with ministers, and just ordinary people not being able to have their say. I think that's, yeah, I think those two things will really frustrate me.
We have got systems in place, though, don't we, for ordinary people to have their say, like the petition system. Like, anybody in this country can write a petition and they can put it to Parliament and they can appear in front of the right committee and they can have the law changed, as we've seen happen with the work that's been done on the Māori wards, Māori representation in councils all around the country. We have the power to make change, but then we have... you know, if we do have a change of government in this election, then those gains are lost. How do we protect that? How do we protect those amazing gains and then lose them and stop ourselves from losing them?
I think the most important thing is to have conversations, you know, with whānau and friends, and like really stress them that this is going to be one of the most important elections ever. Like, there's things that need another term to bed in, things like fair pay agreements. And if we don't fight for it this election, we'll lose it. And the second is by, even though the government might change, we still have power on the streets. You know, we still have power in our workplaces. There'll be constraints on what a National ACT Party will be able to do because of the work that organizes on the ground and the pressure we'll be able to bring. You know, for example, I saw things like the Zero Carbon Act, and through Generation Zero, I was able to help pass that and enshrine a cross-political consensus on that. I mean, you know, even though the big business are powerful, the people are even more powerful. And by enshrining a societal consensus, we're able to, like, ensure that things like that aren't able to be touched as well. I mean, we've gone a long way in the climate change conversation in this country, thanks to the work of, you know, people power on the ground.
I asked you what you're worried about not liking. What do you think you would like about it? Where would your joy come from in the space?
I think the joy from that space is, I guess, the joy that I've also experienced as OUSA president, in that being able to, like, advocate for people and make changes for people. It's really empowering being able to make even small differences. Like, when I was OUSA president, we put on a free breakfast program, and, you know, even though it's such a small thing, that's made a big difference in the lives of students. I remember years after I stopped being OUSA president, talking to, like, a student who'd graduated and them telling me how that was life-changing for them, how, you know, how getting a free feed helped them save a little bit of money and relieve the pressure from their budget. And, you know, because it's like a free breakfast that goes on for a while, they were able to, like, sometimes take, you know, food away and have it for lunch as well. And this woman was like a single mom, and she said that it made a big difference for her and her, you know, tamariki. So yeah, just being able to, like, advocate for things is really powerful, and being able to, like, make the difference you can is will feel really empowering.
Yeah, it's funny you should bring up the breakfasts, because, of course, one of the if we do have a government change, then one of the things that's on the chopping block is the free lunches that are making such a significant difference in schools, especially here in the Eastern Bay of Plenty, where we've got extremely high levels of poverty. And that, what what we've seen is we haven't actually had the massive drop in school attendance, and I put that a lot down to the free food. So is that something, would the Green Party still support the continuation of that free food program that keeps kids going to school and takes away so much pressure from families?
Yeah, absolutely. And not only do we support it, we'd also extend, you know, services like that that supports our most vulnerable populations. And, you know, that free food in schools actually originally, like this is an example of how the Green Party has influence outside of, you know, I think that was a Green policy all the way back from 2002 that Labour then adopted, and good on them. I mean, obviously, I think it's great that, like, Labour are open to adopting green ideas that they adopted a decade and a bit later. So, yeah, it's something we definitely support, and it's something that we want to see and roll out programs like that going forward.
Bubble Sprite of the Forest of Orokonui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi aroha nui kia koutou, ko tāwa hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, as we all know, the last several years have been very tough, and it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the love, the care, the time, the support, the compassion, the understanding that we also richly deserve and can give. And of course, for me, being part of this show has been such a beautiful journey of growth and recognition of multiple, myriad, infinite realities which we're all inhabiting. And I'm so grateful to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. Nga mihi nui kia koutou. Thank you for having me. Very special. So I come to you now, obviously, from Aotearoa's Dunedin, and it's been a beautiful day. And last time we spoke, I was about to MC the Suicide Awareness event at the beautiful Knox Church, and it went really well. I'm so relieved, and I was able to feel just so grateful to be in a vulnerable space with the people around me and give space and support to those who wanted to talk and share their perspective, their kaupapa, their experience. And it was a great honour for me. And of course, we lit 538 candles, and that number has been dropping over the last few years. So beautiful to recognise that. And beautiful to recognise the ways that we can honour and grieve for and love those that have departed, but also use the energy that we have, the love that we have, the appreciation that we have for those we love, to move towards a future where we can offer help to those around us and a different perspective to those around us. So a very special event. And of course, for me, it's always a great honour to be in the public realm and to really see the beautiful biodiversity and the magnificence of the living world embodied. And I really feel that, of course, we are nature observing itself, and we are the product of billions of years of co-evolution here, and so physically present, and what a gift that is for us all, you know. And as much as we all have so many ups and downs constantly, and it's constantly a juggling act, there's so much to enjoy and find pleasure and find awakening in. So today has been a very busy day. I got up very early and got my beautiful partner off to his arborist work, and I went and picked up this amazing interactive enviroscape from my heart's home, Orokonui Eco Sanctuary. And this is something I've been lent from EnviroSchools, which is very kind. And it's like an interactive landscape that shows how pollution moves around. And the kids just love it. It's very fun to play with. And it's a great way to learn. And so, of course, for all of us, we really, in many ways, are playing, which is beautiful. And I do think that's the way that we learn. And if we can find the time, the space, the perspective to really enjoy these moments of interchange and connection with each other, to see what we're doing as play and as an experiment and as precious and as sacred with all of that, which is another reason I love Orokonui. I think we can really release ourselves from the bonds of conditioning and expectation and just really enjoy what's presented to us. So thank you again for having me as part of the show. I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Francisco Hernandez. Francisco, do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
I think my definition of sustainability would be that... well, obviously, it's context dependent, but, you know, that resources are able to be used and nurtured and thrive from one generation to the next one.
Yeah. Is that radical enough? We talked about radical policies. Is that enough to... Is that going to make enough difference, or do we need to be moving to regeneration or to thriving or something?
Yeah, well, that's why I use the word thriving, because, yeah, I really want to make sure that things like circular economies are implemented. But I think, and this is one of my frustrations of the left, is that we have no shortage on good ideas, right? Like, there's like a billion good ideas, but we need to like get serious about turning the machinery of government around to like implement those good ideas, because what good ideas if you can't win the public support to a like actually be in a position where you can implement them, and b, once you're in government, actually make things happen. I mean, we've seen huge frustration with like this current government kind of promising things and not being able to deliver. And the left is good at ideas. We need to start getting better at execution as well.
In order to make things happen, though, does the left or the Greens kind of have to not sell out on those ideas, but are they, in order to make stuff happen, does it have to reach into the what we might call the center?
I think we've seen the opposite of that, actually, this election. The Green Party has embraced radical ideas and seeing our support thrive. I mean, in the taxpayers union poll in February or March this year, we were on the brink of not making it to parliament. You know, we were polling at 5.7%. Now, since we've launched ideas like the free dental, like the wealth tax, like the $10,000 tax-free threshold, we've seen our support more than double. I think in the latest taxpayers Curia poll, we're at 13% in that poll. And at the start of this year, we were at 5.7%. So that just goes to show like that actually voters are ready for radical ideas. But you have to present and talk about it in the right way, in a way that actually improves and makes a difference to the material lives of people. So, for example, the wealth tax, which will then be redistributed to like tax cuts for everyone, which will then also help fund things like free dental, which will also fund climate action. And if you marry up climate action with things that will actually make a difference in people's lives, so for example, we propose things like home energy grants, which will help install rooftop solar. And what that rooftop solar will do is help lower your energy bills. So you you think about how you can address the things that are on top of people's minds, which is the cost of living crisis, and you go for like 2-for-1 solutions that can fix several issues at the same time, an integrated policy approach.
We've seen over the last few years a rise in, let's call it, Trumpian approaches.
Populism.
Yeah, the post-truth, the misinformation, yep. But also the appealing to the emotion and the setting up pretty much everybody as if they're a victim. How do you combat that? Because you can't combat it with facts. Well, maybe you can. What's your take?
I think the main way we can combat the sort of rise of the Trumpian populist right is by building a movement of our own that engages people, because it's luring a lot of people who are disaffected. I mean, the main people who are spreading it are the very wealthy in our society, right? They're the billionaires, the oil companies, who are funding disinformation campaigns to block things like climate action. But they're using the most vulnerable in our community as their foot soldiers, like as the most disaffected people are being lured to movements like this because they feel like they've been let down and abandoned by the state. So we, the left, have to do a better job of like building these kind of popular movements that you know, bring people in. But we also have to make sure that people are being looked after, because when people are like desperate, when people are isolated, they're willing to turn to a friendly smile, even though that smile has motivations that are ultimately not going to be good for you know, our people and our planet. Sometimes people just turn to the first friendly face they see. So we need to be there first, and we need to be smiling and engaging with those communities before the right can get there.
Is that what the campaign is about for you, about getting out and being that face?
Yes, it's about like engaging with people and, yeah, talking to people and advocating for them, you know? And that's what I've been trying to do throughout this campaign.
You famously ran a campaign based on Brandnam style, I think it was?
Brandnam style, that's right, yeah.
Have you got something like that ready to roll?
Not exactly like that, but you know, we're going to be trying to like engage with and mobilize young people the best we can.
The media, of course, talking about US presidential, is very much fixated on the leaders and the leaders of the big parties in particular. What's the strategy for getting some breakthrough on a local basis?
So how we've been able to get cut through this sign of, you're right, there's like kind of the FPP brain, you know, first past the post brain, where people kind of pretend that we're still in the two-party system when actually, no, that's not the case. So we've kind of tried to break through that by running on a like bold populist platform that kind of makes sure that we're, you know, reaching voters that are excited by what we're advocating for. And the second is by like building a people-powered grassroots campaign from the ground up. I mean, we saw breakthroughs like Chloe Swarbrick winning Auckland Central, and we're seeing a lot more efforts by the Greens to run 2-tick campaigns across the country. So yeah, just building that local popular base and by running on bold policies and a bold vision for the future.
Let's take the second of your music choices. Let's have Olivia Rodrigo, Deja Vu. We haven't played this before. Why this one?
Well, Olivia Rodrigo is like one of the most famous Filipinas on the planet. So, and I really like that song. It's really catchy. So...
Malibu strawberry ice cream, one spoon for two and trading jackets, laughing about how small it looks on you. Watching reruns of Glee, being singing in harmony. I bet she's bragging to all her friends, saying you're so unique. So when you gonna tell her that we did that too? She thinks it's special, but it's all reused. That was our place, I found it first. I made the jokes you tell to her when she's with you. Do you get deja vu when she's with you? Do you get deja vu?
Gosh, it's a real game of fortunes, isn't it, politics? What are your chances of getting elected, do you think, or at least getting into the parliament?
I think on current polling, I'm actually going to be in parliament on the current polling, because we've got 17 MPs. The poll of poll has us at about 13%, which means 17 green MPs, and I'm number 17 on the list, so... I'll be on edge throughout the whole election campaign. But look, we've as I mentioned to you earlier, we've essentially gone from 5.7% to like 13% in just a few months. And in the last month of the campaign, where people are actually paying attention, I think they'll realize that our kind of bold green policies are, you know, the things that they want. So we'll go even higher up the polls. So yeah, I'm confident and optimistic that our campaign will go really well. Yeah.
You were talking before about that bipartisan approach where it's about what's best for everybody and not just what aligns with the promises that you made to the people when you were getting elected, which is, you know, it seems to me that's what way too much policy is based on, is trying to keep promises. But how do you think we actually shift that thinking where we actually get, like, and I think about it, like, as a teacher, I have got my learner-centered practice. My practice is all based on what is best for the learner. And so how do we move that current what's best for getting me elected to what's best for the people who are doing the electing? What's best for the country? What's best for the whenua? How do we move that?
I think through that kind of long-term thinking approach and by taking the partisanship out of policy through things like the Climate Change Commission. I really like what Wales are doing with the kind of future generations thinking that they're getting into. So yeah, things like that, and also by tapping, you know, obviously into indigenous wisdom, like the seven generations approach that the Haudenosaunee Confederacy kind of advocated for, we can really start thinking about and taking a more holistic approach to politics rather than that kind of partisan lens.
When I think about some of the MPs that are, you know, that have put their hand up around the country now, and I try and consider them in that space, it doesn't work. Like, do you have a strategy for getting them to move from that? I don't know how to describe the way they think. They're, you know, wanting to return back to a 1950s approach to race relations. They're wanting to take away everything that's anything to do with Māori, because they're under this completely misguided view of the world that Māori are somehow massively advantaged. Like, how do you think we can move them from that?
I think the blunt answer is that you can't. We just have to work around them and build like a majority of people, you know, tangata whenua, tangata tiriti. Like, the people are moving. People are like really growing up in this like new Aotearoa, and they're embracing the vision of it. I mean, one of the Filipino restaurants in South Dunedin that I frequent has, you know, the Maori channel on all the time. I think, you know, migrants are increasingly embracing this titiriti-centric future. And I think a lot of the younger generation is too. So, yeah, I think even though in this election we might have a setback with things going back a little bit, I think, you know, elections are transitory things. You can swim against the wave, but eventually you'll get tired and you'll get swept by the wave. And I genuinely think that Māori Renaissance has built up too powerful of a wave to like be overcome. Like, David Seymour is like King Canute. He's trying to hold back a tide that he can't. So yeah, just take pride and take power in that fact that even though we might lose, you know, we might lose this election, we might lose a battle, but we won't lose the war. Like, things have gone too far for him to roll back entirely. So I take heart in that, and I think you should too.
Is it a fundamental, is it a fact of life, a fundamental fact of life, that some people respond to what's in it for me and other people respond to what's in it for us?
Yes.
Is there a bridge to that, or are we just going to have to put up with that?
I think the bridge to that is that appealing to people's values, right? Like, ultimately, you know, we all want everyone to be doing well, and people's interpretations of that are different. But we have to kind of break down and deconstruct that actually some visions are better than others, you know, like that kind of individualistic short-term thinking will actually impoverish you as an individual in the long run, not only like materially, but emotionally as well. You know, it'll stunt you as a person, like thinking that being selfish is actually going to get you anywhere compared to, like, you know, how we as a species have evolved. I mean, there's a myth that as a species we've evolved to be like individualistic, but that's not true at all. We've like evolved to embrace communities, you know, tribes, and that's the only way humanity has actually ever progressed. It's by looking after each other. And that's one of the first signs of, like, actually intelligence is the moment in the development of humanity. It's when we start finding evidence that people who are injured are looked after, that they're not just left to die. That's the sign of the development of intelligence.
Let's take the questions to end the show with, and we've not got much time, so we're going to have to wriggle. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
I think the biggest success that I've had in the last couple of years was at the Climate Change Commission, where I was leading the waste work stream. So our recommendations were adopted in full by the government, and those recommendations had were very ambitious towards reducing waste emissions and shifting towards a circular economy and reducing the waste we generate and increasing the amount we recycle. So that's probably the proudest professional success that I've had and personal success. But I mean, I guess the second one would be potentially getting elected to parliament, but that hasn't happened yet.
What's your superpower?
My superpower is probably being able to like go to a restaurant and then not finding a line there. I seem to have an uncanny knack to do that.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
I think we're all activists in our own way. And yes, I certainly consider myself as one.
What motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
I think what gets me out of bed in the morning is just the volunteers and the people who really believe in, you know, Te Pāti Kākāriki, the Green Party. There's, you know, hundreds of thousands of supporters across, you know, across the country, across the whenua, who are really wanting to push us and push the country in a great direction. So yeah, I get up in the morning for our supporters and our volunteers.
There might be an obvious answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's the biggest challenge or perhaps opportunity that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Probably the election, which is in 1 month and 1 day away.
It comes up on us real quick. It seems like forever away, doesn't it? It seems like an election, yes. Whatever. That's going to be never. Yeah. That's never like going to happen. All of a sudden, it's in a month or so.
Yes. Yeah. It really has.
So, lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I think my main advice to your listeners is really engage in the political process. It's, you know, a month and a day away. And this country, whatever choice you're making, you should have your say. That's always my fundamental belief. We're lucky enough to live in a democracy that people have literally fought and died for. And yeah, we shouldn't take that for granted. You should have your say no matter how you're going to have your say. Have your say.
Thank you for that. Mawira.
Francisco, I just want to say thank you very much for your service to the wider community so far in your various practice spaces, for your time supporting students, which, gosh, it's tough being a student, especially at the moment, and for those things that you put in place that they're still benefiting from today, for the work that you've done in the climate change space, because we need more people doing that work, so it'd be sad to see you go. But also exciting to see you in a space where you'll be able to really, hopefully, make some real positive change and get some real traction in the wider political community. So all the best for the upcoming election, and we wish you all the best, and we look forward to seeing the result and the result of your hard work to come. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Thank you.
Thank you.
All aboard, get on board. All aboard, get on board.
There's a train coming somewhere down the track. The people that ain't ready better step in back. This train has been running since time began. It's running on the love of your fellow man. All aboard,
all aboard,
you better get on board. All aboard, child, you better get on board. People get ready, there's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic Te Pukenga. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio on Wednesday afternoons at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. This is The Persuasions. We'll get ready. I'm Samuel Mann and Sawyer's Baden Eden with Mawira Karatai in Whakatane, and we've been joined by Francisco Hernandez. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Ka te wā.
Then one day the world will be full of love. I truly believe. There ain't no room for the hopeless sinner, one who would hurt all mankind just to save his own. We should have pity on those, cause their chances grow thinner. There's no hiding a place amongst the kingdom's throne. All aboard,
this podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.